Welcome back to the Terminal Exchange, the official podcast of Nussbaum Transportation. I am thrilled to be here today with Steve Mallory. Welcome to the podcast, Steve.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So you've been with Nussbaum for just hit 8 years, right?
8 years last week.
Okay. Yep. And you started out as a driver manager, then went to a float driver manager.
Yep.
And we're recording this podcast in December, and December is kind of a big month for you, as I understand. I think it started with a birthday.
Is birthday that right? Last week, my 8-year anniversary here last week, and I turned 69 years old. Mm-hmm. So it's been quite a week.
Yeah, and sounds like you had a pretty big wedding anniversary. Is that right?
Yeah, we hit number 50 this year in July.
Wow. Congratulations.
Yeah, thank you.
That's awesome.
That was a goal, and it was a good goal. Worked out well.
Yeah.
Yep.
And tomorrow is actually another big day for you.
We're going to cap it off with a retirement.
Okay.
So, yep.
Well, I always told Steve that he just wasn't allowed to retire. I mean, whenever we would eat lunch together, that was always what I told him. But he didn't listen to me, so.
I listened for 8 years.
Well, I've only been here for 5 years. Well, you've only been listening to me for 5 years. No. Yeah, we're excited for you. Excited for you to go to this next stage. And we just wanted to take some time today to reflect with Steve about his career at Nussbaum, your life, your time in transportation. Mm-hmm. You've been a truck driver and a dispatcher in quite a few roles. And I'm looking forward to this conversation.
Very good. Me too.
So I guess to start, maybe just tell us a little history, you know, take us back to the growing up years. What do you remember from those days?
Well, I was born in Chicago, lived there for a year, and then I moved to Eureka with my folks, and my dad went to college in Eureka. And this would have been he graduated in 61. At that point, I had a little brother, and the four of us moved to Iowa for 8 years. Dad got a job offer out there, and we went out there, and a friend of his from college called him back and said, there's a trucking company in Eureka that's looking for a business manager, and they'd like to interview you. So Dad interviewed, and we moved back to Eureka in 1969 and never left again. So,
okay. So you moved back when you were about?
Just starting sixth grade.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it was kind of a tough time to move back, but it really worked out well. Mm-hmm. I'm glad we did move back.
Yeah.
Yep.
So even your dad worked in the trucking industry before you.
Dad was a business manager at Brubaker's in Eureka, back when Brubaker owned the business. This was, you know, like late 60s there. Mm-hmm. And I got out of high school, and I started to work there, loading trucks. And at that point, working for a trucking company meant you could learn to drive with them. Mm-hmm. So I got a learner's permit, and I was actually able to drive with a licensed driver, start driving straight trucks and semis when I was 18, mm-hmm. 19, right in that area, and got my license. And so I loaded trucks for them in the morning and took off on a trip, maybe to Ohio or something like that, and delivered the next morning. We hauled Hallmark greeting card fixtures. Okay. So it was kind of specialized hauling and more like a van service. Mm-hmm. And because it was all hand packed, it wasn't fork trucked into a trailer. It was loaded. So it was a good round way to learn trucking. And I drove until I was 21, and then I got I was Class D back then, my commercial driver's license. Mm-hmm. And the chauffeur's licenses had just phased out, I think, a year or two before that, and went to a Class D. So I was kind of in first part of that, and mm-hmm. yep, that's how I got into trucking.
Okay. Yeah. Well, before you got into trucking, you were telling me that you had a job in high school, I believe it was, at a service station that kind of impacted you. Could you tell us about that?
I was worked at a Texaco gas station that was locally owned in Eureka, and I went to school with actually Doug Wietrich, who is around here a couple times a year with the big class of the future business
the CEO
people.
Class, yeah.
And so I get to see Doug over here with that, and it's interesting. But I worked for his dad, his dad's brother and nephew. So I had three bosses there, and there was three different ways of doing everything in that building. So you had to know who was in the room with you as to how you changed the tire or how you did this or that, because there was three different ways of doing everything. But what I really learned there was customer service, how to deal with people, knowing people well enough to call them by their first name, and knowing when that was correct to do or not to do. It was a job that I was very thankful I had, because it taught me how to deal with public and and work with people. And I saw them in public, you know, after that, and I'd thank them just for what they trained me and what they gave me back then. It was good. And that was through high school. That was sophomore year through senior. I graduated in 75, and I worked for the station there about a month later, and then I went to trucking.
Okay. And that was in a time when, like, service stations, it was more, like, staffed by attendants.
Yes.
Like, even a higher level of service than what we think of a gas station
today. Yeah, they were like dress work pants, and a clean shirt had to be pressed, so we had laundry service. We always looked good. But if you got dirty in the building, you needed to go change clothes before you went back on the drive.
Interesting.
It was just the way it was. We were out there to service people. There was five gas stations in Eureka, and a 4,500 population.
Wow.
So if you wanted to keep people, you had to service the customer correctly. So that was fun. It was interesting to learn and actually see what was happening. You know, and respect, and these people wanted their windshield washed, the gas put in, we checked oil, tires if they wanted it, whatever the customer needed.
Yeah.
And it was good training. I really always appreciated that.
Yeah, those are foundational skills for any type of career where you're in service.
Yep.
I think it's the same things that hold true today for how Nussbaum provides great service is that
yes, they do.
Those relationships and how you interact with people.
Yeah. I agree with that wholeheartedly, and I think a lot of our drivers have done very well with it, and we get good reports back, you know, and it's fun to read those when we get them, that this driver was over and above and all that, and it's good to see.
Yeah. Tell us a little bit about your family. I know you have a wife and kids and grandkids that you're pretty proud of. So
I am. I'm very proud of them. Met my wife in junior high school. She tells a different story than I do, but she claimed that I was loud and obnoxious a little bit in seventh, eighth grade. I don't believe that ever happened.
No, I don't either.
Yeah, but I don't know where she got that. But I sat across from her in study hall, and we chit-chatted a little bit, not a whole lot, but high school rolled around, and I asked her to homecoming one year, sophomore year. We dated through high school and got married after high school. So we just had a 50th anniversary, but actually been with her about 54, 55 years. So
that's really cool.
And we had three daughters who gave me three of the best son-in-laws I could have ever ordered. I couldn't order it any better than what I got. We have seven grandkids, and four of them are now married. And so we have 11 grandkids, the way I look at it, and one great-grandchild at this point.
Okay.
Just found out at Thanksgiving time we have three great-grandchildren on the way.
Oh, congratulations.
So that's cool. One in January and two in April. So looking forward to next year. It's going to be fun.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, that's really cool. It just adds a whole new joy to life, or so So I'm told. I'm not a parent or a grandparent, but I've watched my parents become grandparents over the past year or two. So
it's been a neat. It's a neat stage to be in.
Yeah. So you talked a little bit at the beginning about kind of how you first got involved in transportation. Take us back a little bit to just the transportation industry in general. Kind of paint us a picture. What was it like back then? How was it different than it is today?
A lot of the equipment was a lot more primitive. When I started, we had a gas tractor, and we had several over-the-road diesel tractors. One of the old tractors was an air start and air steering assist. So every time you turn the steering wheel, tss, 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 and all this. And the equipment, it wasn't like what you're jumping into now that's power everything and and smooth. This was older equipment. And I drove what was called a cab over back then, an old International to start it with, and then I moved up to newer ones as I went. But I put on approximately 800,000 miles on these old cab overs in the time that I was there.
And so what's, for those who may not know, what's a cab over?
Cab over was a tractor that was flat front and the steering wheels, the driver sat directly over.
Gotcha.
And the cab would tilt forward when you worked on it. The motor was underneath you.
Mm-hmm.
Where our trucks, they have a hood on them and you can lift the hood and see the motor at that point.
Yeah.
So that was the main difference. They rode a lot rougher. The last cab over that I had was a brand new 1980, and I put almost 400,000 on it. But it was just a really neat truck. It was an Eagle, which was the higher end International, so it had really neat seats and it was just fancier, and I liked it. It had a lot of chrome on it, and
yeah,
I liked bling. So. Yep.
So how would they dispatch your load? I mean, this was before tablets and, you know, phones and the whole nine yards. So
or a little
cell
different.
Phones, I mean,
it was a little different. You walked in and you looked at a chalkboard, and you saw your name, and you went across and Monday, Tuesday through the week, and it had an X, and it would say Dallas, Texas, or wherever you were going, and maybe later on Thursday it would say Dallas, Texas again. And I ended up getting on a run with them that I did for about 3.5 years where I was in Texas twice a week and back home. And that racks the miles up pretty quick.
Mm-hmm.
But we hauled Hallmark greeting card fixtures, so we hauled a lot of loads to Texas and Oklahoma and down that way, unloaded at the customers. And then we would drive over to a town called Center, Texas, on the east side there, and we always grabbed a load of plywood coming back to Metamora. So it was kind of like a round trip. Most of the time we knew what we were doing. If loads were slow, we had to get a broker load to maybe get to Texas because we had stuff coming back. So it was servicing the customer a lot like we do now. But the electronics weren't there at all. There was no cell phone. I used to call home at 10 o'clock at night and talk to my wife then. And if my boss needed me to call him, he would call my wife and say, hey, when you talk to Steve, have him call in first thing in the morning.
Really?
And that's how you made contact. It just,
yeah.
As far as loads being dispatched, I knew generally where I was going. But there was some times we get down there and or get to Oklahoma, there wasn't anything coming out of Texas, so we'd have to find load coming back.
Mm-hmm.
So it was stop and get on a payphone and call C.H. Robinson. They were around back then, and see what they had coming out of Oklahoma going home.
So. And directions were, is all by Atlas, right?
Like you totally just... by Atlas, yeah. I'll ask drivers now on the phone, I said, did you look at Joran McNally? And they'll go, well, I've got that as a as a device. And I said, no, I mean the map. Because to me, looking at a map always let me know where I'm going to be turning south or what other road I'm going to be getting on.
Mm-hmm.
And you look at a little screen, you don't always get the picture of, okay, I'm going to be driving 300 miles before I go south. But
yeah,
you look at a big picture, but that's the only way I knew. There was no electronics to help with any of it.
Yeah.
Yep. It was different.
I kind of pride myself a little bit on being like in the generation of kids that still remembers those, because
okay,
my parents would use them when we went on vacation.
Yep.
I remember being a kid and seeing the GPS up on the dash, but they also had one of the good old fashioned, and you know, they would kind of look at the route and figure out where we were going
to
go. And
you could go out to my car right now and find one, actually.
I'm sure they're useful. We still carry them in the company store for drivers that want to carry them. But
that's good. That's good. That was old school, but I know the new devices are nice. They're, for the most part, they work pretty well. But looking at it on paper, I only had a bad ordeal one time, getting lost, really bad. But I know I've heard horror stories on on these devices too. They can lead you astray sometimes.
Yeah.
That's all good.
So are there any, as you think back over your career as a truck driver, are there any stories or situations or just kind of memories that stick in your mind from in that time?
Yeah, I learned to drive basically in Chicago. You know, after I got my license and that, we hauled a lot of, you know, Hallmark stores up Chicago too. Mm-hmm. And I talked to one of our drivers at the time. I said, hey, I've got to run one up to Irving Park Road in that area. And he just told me exactly how to get there. So I went exactly the way he told me and made the corner right when I jumped off interstate and looked right at a 12-6 overpass with a 13-6 trailer. And I just stopped. And the cop come running over and he said, hey, you can't park there. I said, what am I supposed to do? And he said, you put your four ways on, start backing up. They'll move. Okay, this isn't the way I did things at all. But to be told to do that, I put my four ways on and just start creeping. He says, no, you get it out of here. So I backed up and had to jump back on the next, you know, get on and go up a ways and then come back down. But I had a talk with that driver who tried to help me after that. That isn't the way we want to go. Yeah. But that was one of the horror stories of Chicago when I first started. And you learn, and back then we used to have to call a phone number. If you didn't have the routing you needed, you had to call I don't remember what it was right now. It was the city of Chicago, a department that would actually tell you how you could get through and not run into a overpass or anything like that. So just the change, and I mean, all that's kind of mapped out, I think, now on these new devices, but it wasn't like that back then. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah. What about when you drove hazmat for quite a while, didn't you?
The last 8 years that I drove, I pulled hazmat tanker, and it was primarily 200 proof alcohol. I didn't mind hauling that. It was the only thing that was bad about it is it was food grade material, so they couldn't put baffles in the trailer to keep the slosh from going back and forth, because it cannot be washed out correctly for food grade at that point. So that was just something you have to get used to, that when you stop, you're going to feel this slosh going to hit you and push you forward or whatever. That's a little odd when you're on icy roads and you hit that and it pushes you forward, slides you forward about 3 foot. But just you learn the product and what it does, and it's you respect it like you would any other load. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I was hazmat for 8 years.
And so being hazmat, what are there special like requirements, like ways you have to check the trailer before you leave out or wear certain placards, or what's kind of
all involved? Of that? The knowing your equipment was a lot of it, and knowing what you had to do to secure everything. And that was something you didn't want to pull in and have a loose connector anywhere, as far as having a hatch down, because if you rolled it and spilled, it was going to be bad. But you could actually avoid all that and just really, really know your equipment and do it the way you're supposed to do it. Mm-hmm. You get pulled into scales quite a bit more often when you're placarded, and I'm sure our drivers should talk about that too. But you get pulled in a lot more, inspected a lot more. I couldn't get past the Springfield scale, and I couldn't get past the one down by Troy. Just south of Troy, going south into St. Louis. Just every week I got pulled into those. Mm-hmm. And you just about knew the scale guy by name at certain points. But they were always nice, and they checked you out good. And that's with all the electronics that those guys have, when you hit the scale and pull in there, they've got different – they know who the driver is because of truck number and license plate number. Mm-hmm. They know the last time you were inspected. They've got a lot of different ways that they know when the last time you got an inspection was. But I wished we'd had what Nussbaum does and pays you for a good, clean report like that. That would have been real handy back then.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So over those years that you spent truck driving, how many miles do you think you've accumulated?
I had all my logbooks, and I added them up.
You kept all of them?
I did. I have since gotten rid of quite a few years of them. I think I've got just a couple years now, and I don't know why. But I added them all up, and I was right between 2.7 and 2.8 million miles.
Wow.
That I logged. And it was all, I always had God as a co-pilot. There was no doubt about that. There's things that happened that, you know, that'll happen to any driver that you wonder why something bad didn't happen. Mm-hmm. But I know why. And well, the great part of it was I got through all that without any moving violations and no accidents. I had two scale tickets the whole time I drove.
Wow.
And I wasn't too proud of those either, but that's, I had a good career with
yeah.
it.
Yeah. So I guess this is just coming to me now, but like, what advice would you give to a driver about, because today we talk a lot about safety and, you know, practice your habits and your mm-hmm. skills, but how would you encourage them to, what does it take to just that level of safety? And
well, I think Nussbaum does a very good job of telling drivers what they want, what they need, and what they need to do. And I think if you look at our record, you know, with fines or different problems we do have, it's very few for the amount of times they're pulled in. Mm-hmm. So I think that the way Nussbaum does it has been worked very well to get the point across. They do well with paying these guys to do it the way Nussbaum wants it done. Mm-hmm. You know, that they can do the extra training, get certified red and all that. And that training, I think, helps them a lot, too. Mm-hmm. There wasn't any of that when I started either. It just, you learn by doing it. And I think a lot of guys could probably relate to that. I'm not the only one that went through all that, but I might be the oldest one around here right now that could go back that far. But that was all late 70s, early 80s when I started driving over the road.
And you said that somebody just said, hey, hop in with me and we'll kind of and learn as we go.
When I started loading trucks, the idea was we wanted to take more than one truck over to Metamora to load when we did it. So they wanted to get me trained so at least I could take another truck with us mm-hmm. pretty quick. So that's the way it was back in those days. You didn't have to go to a driving school. You could learn it and then go get your license at the DMV. So, yeah, it was a little bit different deal back then.
Yeah.
Yep.
And you jumped at the opportunity in that way?
Well, at that point I was young and wanting to make money, and driving was where the money was at that place too. I could load trucks all day and go home tired, or could load half a day and take a truck trip.
Yeah.
So the money was good back then. Yep.
Yeah, makes sense. So you went back to driving in 2001, mm-hmm. is that right? And then you came to Nussbaum in
December 17.
December 17, okay. How did you get here? What brought you to Nussbaum?
This is a little odd, but I worked for a couple different trucking companies that actually went through sellouts. The owners decided to retire, and it was a good time just to move on, and they sold their company to another place. So one company that I worked for first sold out to Brubaker. This was when I said earlier when Brubaker owned it. Mm-hmm. They sold out to Brubaker, and I ended up working for them about a year and a half. And I just wasn't what I really wanted to do because I was going to New York quite a bit. And at that point, three times in a month was enough going to Brooklyn. Mm-hmm. So I found a local company, and I would kind of throw that around where I wanted to get a little bit more local and be home more. And I went to work for a company over in Deer Creek, and that's where the hazmat came in. I pulled tanker for Bell, and until Bell decided to sell out. And he sold out his tanker division and asked me and a couple other guys that were there to please stay with him until we got the company sold and they wanted to have people there to help train. So I did that, and I had been talking to Nussbaum a little bit at the time, too. I went to church with Kevin Funk and talked to Kevin. I said, they got anything going on? And he had Josh call me. Josh was in recruiting, and Josh wanted me to come over and drive for you guys. And I didn't want to drive. I was done. I wanted to do something different. Mm-hmm. And throughout my whole driving, I wanted to do something I thought that would benefit other drivers so that when I quit, I could help either newer guys or... I just never felt a lot of times that anybody had my back when I was on the road. Mm-hmm. And I thought, I'd like to be somewhere where I can be somebody and be, you know, behind that driver and help them get through situations and that. But the funny part was when I came here, there wasn't really anything that I needed to get behind their back on, like some of the stuff that I had worked for. Mm-hmm. And I can't say enough good about Nussbaum. I never drove for him, but it was a company I wish I'd have found 30 years ago.
Yeah.
You know, that's as honest as I can get with it. So.
And initially when you came, there was a little bit of uncertainty because right after you started is when we decided to become an ESOP. So tell us a little bit about that.
I told you I went through the two sellouts, okay? And I was here about a month, maybe 6 weeks, and this talk started coming around about ESOP. But it was presented in, there's going to be new owners. It was kind of, I don't know, I don't want to say vaguely put, but I kind of think it was, the way it was presented, it was more of a surprise atmosphere. Mm-hmm. And I right off the bat, I thought, no, not another sellout. I can't go through this again, you know, because I just gone through my last two jobs. And honestly, I would have retired probably from either one of those two jobs had they not sold out. But I'm glad the way it worked out. There was a reason why things work out the way they do. And that wasn't my planning, but I can see why it happened now. Mm-hmm.
So then what did you think when you then did understand what an ESOP means? And
I was relieved, and it was all new to me. I'd never heard of it. It was fun to hear and fun to watch how it came about. And I can real honestly speak about it right now that it's probably one of the greatest bonuses that I've ever had and ever will have. It was totally unexpected. I'm happy for people your age that have been here now and know you're going to probably stay and write it out and know what you've got, that you've got a real treasure right there waiting for you when you retire, because it's pleasantly surprised me.
Yeah.
And glad to have it.
That's awesome.
Yep.
Yeah, for anybody listening that's not familiar, an ESOP, Nussbaum, is an employee stock ownership plan. Basically what that means is there are private stock shares that employees receive allocated based on their wages, and then it gets invested basically in a supplemental 401k, a retirement account, and then it takes 6 years to fully vest. But yeah, if you're here for 5, 10, 15 years, that can really grow into something impactful.
It started right after I started, so I've got 8 years in it, and it's just a blessing, really is.
Yeah.
And there's not too many companies that do this for employees, and, you know, God bless them.
Yeah.
Yep.
So I also have to ask, over your years here at Nussbaum, as you think through the different pods and groups that you've worked with, do you have any memories or stories or anybody we can embarrass? No.
Well, I've worked in some great pods. And when I started here, Scott Ubengate was training me because I was going to take over his DM board before he moved on. So I got done with my training with him. I was moved up into where Zimmy sits now, Zimmy and Ed. And I was in there with Matt Cheever, Douglas Moore, and Scott Stickling. and me.
That
so that was
fun.
One of the first pods I was in. Good group of guys. Again, three different ways of doing things, but it was all great to learn different ways. So it just reminded me of my first job a little bit, but because I did have three guys that were helping me because I was really new. I was in that quite a while. I was in a pod with Livy Stoller and Maya, and Anthony moved in with us for a while when he first started. That was a fun pod. I was the old man and had two 26-year-old girls in the pod, and they were great girls, and Anthony was fun too. Everybody I worked with here has been good. Been in, like I say, some really good pods. Nathan Wirtz, I think, moved in when Scott Stickling wasn't here anymore. And then Nathan moved on. So when I first started here, Douglas was a floating dispatcher and would fill in when somebody was off or gone or whatever. And I just really thought that was a good way to do it and just have somebody who could just sit in, take care of it. And when the guy came back, there was very little to catch up on. Kind of kept you right in there, and it wasn't unloading, 20 guys on each one of your pod mates.
Yeah.
So I was glad when they went back to the floating position and opened it, and I've been doing that now for about 3 years, and I enjoy that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because it's kind of helped you just get to know lots of different drivers that you wouldn't have otherwise.
I had the opportunity to work with boards while people were being trained. Even when Chris Smith got out of being a DM and moved into the management end of it, I took his board over till his replacement came in, and just you could point at several of them out there that I had their board while they were getting trained. And it was fun to do that because it gave me the opportunity to talk to a lot of drivers that maybe I wouldn't have worked with quite so much.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I've talked to, I'd say, most of them over the years. So,
yeah.
Yep.
It's a lot of touch points with a lot of drivers.
Mm-hmm. But I enjoy that. It was good.
Yeah. So, if somebody asked you, what's it like to work at Nussbaum? What's the culture like? How would you describe past 8 years?
Past 8 years has been, just like I said earlier, a blessing to me. And I have to give a lot of credit to my first job and my last job. The gas station with the customer service, and then the culture here is just been a pleasure to work with and for and all that. The things I kind of thought about and wanted to say about that particular question is just the family atmosphere. Everybody is helpful. I've never felt like I was left out of anything. I can walk into anybody's office in this building right up to the top and knock on the door and talk to anybody I need to or want to. And that doesn't happen everywhere. I've worked at a place where a driver never got any farther than a brick wall with a window in it. And if you wanted to talk to your dispatcher at that point, you went back to your truck and called him.
Wow.
You could see him through the window, but you couldn't talk to him. So just that kind of atmosphere here is just, it's great and it's unreal mm-hmm. compared to other things. So I wrote, several things down, but just the people, I have never, ever felt like I ask a dumb question, even when I started. I've always felt welcome, which is a nice feeling to have.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's the creating positive impact with every interaction. I think that's what makes Nussbaum so special, is that everybody carries that out with their coworkers, with their drivers, with any people that call in from the road. Mm-hmm. There's just that heart of, I want to make somebody's life better. I want to share the blessings that I've received with others.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with that. It's nice to have a driver give you a little feedback sometimes when you're talking to them. And most of them, all they want is an answer to a question. And if you let them know that you're going to do the best you can to get that answer for them, and then get that answer for them, and call them back and let them know that, and it's just, it's an accomplishment and it's appreciated.
Yeah,
you can tell. And I enjoyed that.
Well, you probably, I think you mentioned this, but you probably felt from your days as a driver, a desire to be that dispatcher that maybe you never had, to kind of be the person on the phone that is there to help.
I have to give a little credit to dispatchers, because when I was on the road, I didn't realize what a dispatcher went through or a planner. I had no idea. I often wondered, they knew I was coming to Oklahoma, why couldn't they find a load for me? To when I got here, I didn't have to wait or look around or whatever. And when I came here, I found out what happens when they are looking for a load, and what they go through to find a load sometimes anywhere close to where you are. Mm-hmm. It's going anywhere close to where we want to end up. I never gave it that much thought. But it was an eye-opener to get here. And that's why I wanted to be at a point where I could try to help other people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's what makes your experience so unique and valuable, though, is that you have so many years of the driver perspective and then years of the dispatch perspective. You kind of see the whole picture of what it takes to get a load from point A to point B,
yeah.
Both the company's needs and the driver's needs. And that's a hard thing to balance. Like, that's something probably every carrier struggles with.
Yeah. But
I think that's a really valuable thing that you've brought to the operations team.
Well, I had learned part of it because, like I say, when I first came in here, I called my old dispatcher, actually, a month after I got here. And I said, her name was Beth, and I said, Beth, I just got to tell you, I didn't know what you went through some days. So if I was gruff on the phone, I didn't mean to be. Because I didn't get it. I didn't understand what those people went through to find me a load, so I wasn't standing there waiting on a load. So. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the truth, too. I did call her.
That's really cool.
Yeah. Yep.
All right. So kind of coming in here for a landing a little bit, just had a few fun questions that I wanted to ask you. We hear that you have an interest in old cars. Tell us a little bit about that.
That started when I was probably about 7 or 8 years old. My uncle gave me a box of Hot Rod magazines. And I read every one of them. I just got infatuated with it, and I was into it. So, starting at the gas station, I had bought my first car. It was a 65 Corvair. It was nothing special, but it ran, and I learned how to work on it. And I graduated to my next car, which was a car that I saved for and bought. And bought my own insurance and all that for when I was in high school. It was a 66 Pontiac Le Mans, and I wish I had the car today. I drag raced it. I drove it to Byron, raced it, then drove it home. So you run what you brung, is what they said, and you hope you didn't break anything when you were there.
Mm-hmm.
Did that for one whole summer, just had a ball. But I got into cars, and that was something I did and loved. And I bought a car in 1983, a 1970 Olds 442, that I wanted one of those because my cousin had one when I was a kid. And I had never ridden in a car that, when it shifted in second gear, it chirped the tires. And I thought, that's pretty cool. I want one of those. So I bought it, and I had it 43 years. I just sold it in June.
Wow.
And I missed the car. I wish I'd have kept it, but I'm not able to work on them like I used to and to do what I wanted to do with it. And so sold it to a guy who's just enjoying it, and he has a 14-year-old son, and they're having fun with it.
That's awesome.
Yeah. It's a cool car. I loved it. But I had it a long time.
Yeah. 43 years, that's a long time.
That's a long time. I've had my wife longer than that, but not a lot of other things.
Yep. We also hear that you're kind of a country music connoisseur. So I'd like to ask, what is the best country music song or artist that we should be listening to?
Well, I'm going to step on a lot of toes now because everybody says the new country western music is as good as the old stuff, and it's not even close. Sorry. When I got into country western, it was late 70s, early 80s. And I was that's when I got on that Texas run, too. So I'm in the southern states. You're not going to find a lot of rock and roll or anything else on the radio. Everything you get, once you get south of Missouri, is country western. Mm-hmm. So I got into that, and I was, you know, Waylon Jennings, that kind of stuff. Not Willie Nelson. I just never got used to him. Mm-hmm. But what was fun about driving through Texas is mom-and-pop truck stops was the way it was back then. I mean, you'd go to a big town, and there'd be a big Union 76 or a Petro or something like that. But if you're driving down these roads in Texas, you're stopping at a restaurant that's got two fuel islands out front.
Yep.
Mom-and-pop stuff. And you go in there, and you eat, and maybe you take a nap there or whatever. And you wake up the next morning, and Willie Nelson's bus is parked right next to you. That happened two different times in Texas.
No way.
Yeah. Honeysuckle Rose, I think, is what the name of his bus was. But
wow.
I was also parked in Tennessee one time, and Jeff Gordon's transporter was on one side of me, and Dale Earnhardt Jr. was on the other side. I got a picture of that. That was pretty cool. Just, I don't know why I woke up and they were parked there, but they were headed for a race someplace. Didn't talk to anybody, but the trucks were there.
But just that they showed up at the same time.
Like. Well, they you'd see a lot of them running together because they were all leaving racetracks a lot of times and going back to North Carolina or wherever they were getting their next race cars. Mm-hmm. So that was kind of cool. But as far as old country music, I'll listen to it, but I'm more into oldies now. I had some dental work done at the dentist's office a while back, and the nurses said, "What kind of music you like?" They wanted to make the room comfortable, and I thought, "Okay, I'm going to get these. I'm going to get them here." So I like 60s bubblegum music, and these are all, you know, 20 to 30 year old girls. And well, what is that? And I told them what it was. It's like the Monkees and just old stuff from the 60s. And so they punched it in, and a song started playing. And one of the younger girls in there says, "Oh, that's a theme song from such and such a movie." So she knew the song, but it wasn't anything to do with how I would have known the music at all.
Yeah.
'Cause I had never seen the movie, but it was just funny. It was cute and funny all at the same time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then, can you give us your best 30-second commercial for Made Right? We hear you're quite a fan.
Oh, Made Rights. You betcha. Growing up in Iowa, for the 8 years I was there, there was a Made Right just about in every town around me where I lived. And Made Right is a loose meat hamburger. They scoop it, put it in like an ice cream scoop, a hamburger on your bun, and fix it up with whatever you want on it. But it just... something I grew up with. And they had cheesy fries before anybody else did. And they also would sprinkle Made Right meat over the top of that. So okay. So you were getting all the Made Right you wanted when you ate there. But
so it's a restaurant chain.
It's a restaurant chain. But they're getting few and far between. It was kind of exciting because two or three of them came to Peoria. And I think Bloomington might have had one at one time. They've kind of gone by the wayside. There's not too many of them left around now, but the hometown in Iowa, Grinnell, where I lived, still has one. And my cousins who live Montezuma, just down the road, they have one.
Okay.
So going to Iowa is a good time for me. You eat Made Rights for lunch and a tenderloin at supper, and it doesn't get any better than that.
That sounds pretty good to me.
Yep, that works.
And then we heard that a certain newlywed couple at Nussbaum moved next door to you and had some type of adventure with an air conditioning unit. And I'm not sure what the whole story was, but maybe you can fill us in.
Well, Joe and Marissa live in the house right next to me in Eureka. And they're great neighbors. Love having them there. They have a young daughter. And They have air conditioning exhaust that comes out the side of the house there. And the daughter was playing with I believe it was a glow stick that you bend and it glows. And it was, I don't know, it was getting to be just early evening. And the glow stick disappeared. And they were trying to find out where it was. And she said, well, it's in this exhaust tube. So I went, I had a pincher that was flexible and thought maybe we could trap it with that. And we didn't get it out. So we tried a hacksaw and cut it off so we could get that out and then glued it back together and everything's fine. But it was funny. It wasn't then to them, but it was funny afterwards. And they're great neighbors. Glad to have them.
Yeah.
Yep.
Because you gave them the lead for that house, didn't you?
Well, they had asked for if I heard of anything coming up for sale. And I talked to the guy that lived there before, and he said, hey, I don't know if you heard this yet or not, but we're going to sell the house. And I let Joe and Marissa know about it right away. And I think someone else from here also did that. But I don't want to claim it if I wasn't the first. But they got the house. And I'm glad they're there. I hope they are, too. I think they are.
I think they are.
Yeah.
That's cool. All right. Well, as we're kind of bringing it to a close here, tomorrow is your last day with Neusbaum and before you retire. And just wanted to give you an opportunity. If you have any parting words for your Neusbaum family, Mike is yours.
Okay. I have thoroughly enjoyed the last 8 years that I've been here and getting to know the people. When I started here, we had 350 trucks 8 years ago. And we've moved that up over the 530 range, I believe, now. And we've grown, and it's been a great 8 years for me to watch. We were all in the original building, the Far North building, and the CAC's part was there, but added on everything south from there. Mm-hmm. And to watch that happen and the people they've hired and to work with these people, I love every one of you. I really do. It's been a great place to be, and I'll have great memories of here forever. And I'll miss you guys. But I'm ready to retire. I'm going to try to enjoy that too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we're excited for you, and we'll miss you too. I just wanted to take a minute here and. For our audience, just to maybe understand a little bit, I want to read a few notes that Steve's coworker sent to celebrate his retirement. Congratulations on your retirement. You deserve it. You show a lot of patience and are easy to work alongside. Definitely approachable and a great sense of humor. Thanks for all you have done. I know you will continue to make a difference in many lives just being the person you are. Steve, you always have a great attitude and make working at Neusbaum a positive experience. I know drivers really appreciated working with you as well. Have a great retirement. And then one more here that I wanted to share. I've appreciated Steve's willing attitude and heart for the drivers. He has always connected well with them, and they value him as their advocate here in the office. Thanks for all your contributions over the years. And I think that,
thank you.
That sums it up well.
Thank you. I didn't know that existed, but thanks for reading those.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Thank you very much for being on the podcast today, for sharing your story with us, and we wish you the best and God bless.
Well, thank you. God bless this company and everybody here.
Well, thank you to all of our listeners for being with us today. Until next time, own it every moment and stay purpose driven.
Hi, this is Lisa from Recruiting at Neusbaum, and I'd love to answer any questions you have about driving with us. Give us a call at 309-268-1199 or visit neusbaumjobs.com. Talk to you soon. You've been listening to Terminal Exchange, the official podcast of Neusbaum Transportation. If you're enjoying our content, please leave us a review. Your reviews help us spread the word about these important topics and invite more people into conversation. You can rate and review us on your podcast app or visit us online at terminalexchange.org. New episodes arrive every other Tuesday, so be sure to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. You can also follow Nussbaum on your favorite social media platforms and be the first to know when new episodes are released. Thanks for listening. Until next time, own every moment and stay purpose-driven.